Hello, everybody. It's another week, another episode of Digital High from Entertainment Fuse. I am Aaron the Red, aka the Spicy Ginger, and with me is Vincent,
Hello.
a very special guest. I apologize if I mess up your last name here. Dam Amrich?
It's Amrick with a hard
Amrich.
CH, but that's
Thought
okay. It's
so.
very, very common mistake, and I have been called far worse, so it's okay.
On
I
purpose or
want to
on
know why,
accident?
both, but I want to know why Vincent doesn't have a cool nickname like the Spicy Ginger. Vincent, what's your nickname?
Because he's just not cool
Well,
enough.
my gamer tag, I'm used to people kind of calling me that, is Assumed Killer. And I do like Assumed Killer. But the two nicknames Aaron have, they at least he goes by
That
on this
you know
show,
of.
I gave him. So, and Aaron hasn't given me a nickname yet.
Actually, no,
So
Marquise gave me Aaron the Red.
I gave you that. I said that.
No.
Yeah.
I thought it was Marquise. What?
Nope, it was me.
Okay.
You sent
I've got like
me that
20 or 30.
video, and you had your red Viking beer,
Yes.
and I was like, "This is Aaron
Aaron the Red.
the
And those are only two he knows about.
You have many other aliases that he's not privy to
Yeah.
yet.
Oh, I'm
Yes.
sure you and your fiance have some
That's
nicknames
the
between
late
each other.
night stuff. That's behind the scenes. So that's when you gotta pay the bills, Vince. I'm telling you.
What said bedroom stays in the bedroom.
So, but Dan, you go by One of Swords
Not
also?
anymore.
Oh,
No.
okay. That's your past.
Yeah, One of Swords was was sort of when I started. I was in the media for like 15 years, and I just wrote under my own name, except for when I was at GamePro, when I was Dan Electro. I was the cartoon character Dan Electro for 7 years, and when I got out, I tried desperately to establish my own name. Like, no, this is who I am. This is what I do, and I'm proud to put my name on stuff. Then Activision calls, and they said, "We're looking for a community guy." And like there's JD 2020 and there's 402, so you should pick a name that sort of makes sense to you but also could represent us. And that's how I came up with One of Swords. But then Activision, like so many publishers, they own that IP. So when I left Activision, I left One of Swords. And One of Swords is still going with other people running it. That was sort of the idea from the beginning. So I have some nicknames. I don't really want to give out my gamer tag. I will say that my gamer tag is a dumb joke in Latin, and it's not Semper Ubi Sub Ubi, but and most of the time, if you see Dan Amrick online, that's actually me. Somebody has Dan Amrick on the PlayStation Network, so I'm Dan underscore Amrick there. But I don't know. I actually contacted Sony and said, "Dan Amrick, all one word, might be me. Can you help? If I give you some of my personal information, can you check it?" And they said, "No." And I have not been able to break into the Dan Amrick account. I can't. If it's my own account, I haven't been able to hack it. And if it's not my account, I want to know why somebody took my actual legal name as their gamer tag.
Right.
So I had to go Dan underscore Amrick, and it bothers me every time I see it. I'm just like, underscore. On Twitter, I'm Dan Amrick. That's no problem. My URL is danamrick.com. That's brand unity. But nope, there's an underscore on the
So do you think
PlayStation.
someone might be trolling you, or their name just could be Dan Amrick too?
No, I've never met another Dan Amrick. I've met a few other Amricks. It's not a very common nickname. It's Slovak in origin and sort of came out of Northeast United States. I've seen some people in Connecticut, New Jersey. That's kind of where the Amricks hail from. But when I became this sort of target for people as an Activision employee, then I did see people like making like One of Knives and misspelled One of Swords, One of Axes, and trying to troll me with that stuff. So my fear is that the other PlayStation account is in fact somebody who wanted to use it as a weapon against me, or sort of steal my identity and say something horrible, take a screenshot of themselves saying something horrible under my name, then posting it to the world and saying, "Look at what Dan Amrick just said, and you know it's him because it's his real name." That's my fear. And that's a legitimate fear when you work on behalf of a game publisher to the public. People do that kind of stuff when they're bored or if they're angry or if they just didn't like the last game they bought. They need revenge, and they'll take revenge out on people like me. So that's what I do.
I mean, while we're talking about hate a little bit, hate and the internet, they never go together. But
Sure.
You were Activision. Now you're at Ubisoft. I'm just curious, like, when the way you interact with people online, or maybe when you go to events and things, do you notice, is there a difference when you say, hey, I work for Activision, or hey, I work for Ubisoft, since they even though they're big companies, I think Ubisoft is third, Activision is one as far as the size of publishers right now. But it seems like generally Ubisoft is far more well liked than Activision. Like, have you noticed a different reception towards you?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, you know, Activision has what I always call the Yankees syndrome. People love to hate Activision because they're big and successful, right? And they have a lot of money. And that's the same reason people hate the New York Yankees. You know, Steinbrenner was like, I'll buy the best players and then we'll win championships. And that worked. And then people came to resent that, like, that they didn't like that. So when I was at Activision, I was supposed to be sort of a bridge from the community to this big nameless, faceless organization, to be this like, hey guys, let me explain to you, let me get a little transparent and show you what's going on behind the thing. But I, you know, if you're angry about whatever game's coming out, then you're going to take it out on the guy that works there. So I don't get as much of that. My role at Ubisoft is actually on a development team, which is great, which is really what I wanted to do. I'm not making games, but I'm around all the people that are making the games, and I get my answers directly from the people that made the game. So that's super cool. So as a result, I'm not as much of a target as I used to be, because before I was sort of Activision's Dan Amrick. Now I'm like Rocksmith's Dan Amrick. You know, like, it's a much smaller focus, and the community is very different. You know, the Call of Duty community is extremely vocal, and really, you know, the game is kind of aggressive, and so they're often aggressive too. Whereas Rocksmith is like people that want to learn how to play guitar. That's much more of like a personal journey. You know, it's almost like a self-help game. I've always wanted to learn how to do this, and your product will let me do it. So this is a different vibe. So I don't get as much of the you work for Ubisoft the way that I got for you work for Activision. But also my focus is smaller too. But yeah, like Activision totally always is going to have this, like, we talked about it while I was there too. And they're like, well, what do we do to make gamers, like, you know, get over this? And what do we have to do to make them like us? Should we give them some free games? And I'm like, no, because they'll just complain that you gave them the wrong free games, or that you didn't give them enough free games. Or they'll say, oh, thanks, taking the free game, you still suck. You know, and I saw a lot of that when good things would happen, or when Activision would do something nice or give away something for free, there was still complaints, and there was still like, well, this doesn't excuse the fact that I hate you for an indeterminate reason. You know, it was super weird. But yeah, I don't get it as much anymore. And I do get a different sense of the way that people perceive Ubisoft from the way that they perceived Activision. But again, my perspective is different on that too, because of what my role is within each of those organizations.
Yeah. I mean, I think it happened once or twice, concurrent. I think, right after each other, Activision was named like the top hated company of everything, not even just video games, but everything. Which
that was actually EA.
Yeah.
Was it EA? Oh,
yeah. Okay. It's EA. Okay. Once again, they hold the crown.
I'm confusing the two big evil giants.
Well, not only was I at Activision when that was going on and just sort of wiping my brow, like, phew, missed that one, you know, because I was expecting, like, okay, we're going to do EA 1 year, and then everybody's going to go, now let's go after Activision. When I was in the press, I always had good relationships with Activision. Like, the PR people were always nice to me, and I just kind of felt like, you know, I had actual friends. You have work friends, and then you have, like, relationships that you need to maintain in the press, and then you have people that are actually, like, you want to go and have a drink, or if they're in town, you go out to dinner and you hang out. And that was, in the media, I always felt that way about Activision. Like, these are the people, like, when I left GamePro, nobody talked to me, because I could no longer get them a national magazine cover, you know what I mean? Activision still talked to me. Those people were still really nice and friendly, saying, hey, how's it going? You know, how's the new gig? And even though I couldn't be directly of use to them, I still had, like, nice contacts there. And I noticed that when I was at OXM, EA was the big evil monster. And then Activision and Vivendi did their merger / union, or whatever the hell it was. You know, they bought Blizzard and Sierra and all those brands, and they all got. And I saw over a 6-month period, people completely forgot about the fact that EA was doing all these things that they hated just 5 minutes ago. And 6 months later, Activision was suddenly the big new bad guy. And it wasn't because of anything that Activision had said, done, or produced. It was because there was this belief that the bigger the company, the more evil it must inherently be. And then people started looking, well, who is running this company that's now the biggest company in our industry. They didn't know who Bobby Kotick was. And then they see Bobby Kotick's interviews and he's talking only in financial speak, only to financial people. Mm-hmm. And they started taking that personally and emotionally. And all of a sudden, Bobby Kotick was this monster, whereas they didn't know him. They had never heard of him. In 13, 15 years in the media, when I came on at Activision, the person that hired me said, well, you know, you've spoken to Bobby. I said, I have not spoken to Bobby. She's like, of course, you must have interviewed him at some point. I'm like, no, he was never made available to me. I don't know who Bobby Kotick is either. I have since met Bobby. He's nowhere near the terrible person that the interview would have you believe, the internet would have you believe. Mm-hmm. But it was totally like, I think gamers are trained when you see the big boss, you know you have to defeat that guy. You know, just keep punching at them until they blink red and disappear. And to a certain extent, that falls over to the gaming community sometimes, where they're like, well, I don't understand that, but it looks like a threat, so we must go after it, and we must attack it. And I saw that happen with Activision. Amazing, where the heat went off of EA for a while, and people hated Activision, and then they sort of got bored with hating Activision, and they went back to hating EA. So,
I mean, my point was with bringing that up was I don't think any video game company, anyone can argue with any... You know, any rational person can argue that any video game company deserves to be the top hated company of all companies. Like, what about Monsanto? What about Comcast? What about these companies that are actually like screwing people over, not just, oh, the game got a 7 instead of a 10 out of 10. Like, is actual companies to dislike, and whether it's EA or Activision, they shouldn't be anywhere near the top of all hated companies.
Yeah, you made a game I didn't enjoy as much as I thought I would.
Yeah.
I think it all comes down to trust, because gamers, we're all very emotional beings. I am too. You play a game like... You watch a movie and you get into it. You read a book, you get into it. You listen to an album, you get into it. But those experiences are like 2 hours, an hour for an album, or, you know, like maybe a week for a book. You get into something like Call of Duty or Assassin's Creed, and not only is it interactive where you're really emotionally invested, but you're planning to play this for 15 hours, 30 hours, 200 hours in a multiplayer game, you know? So there's this sense that I am vulnerable by being emotionally invested in your product. So if you make me feel like that emotion is not invested correctly, or that I made a mistake by investing in my emotion, I loved you. You didn't love me back because this game only got a 7 or whatever, right? I think that's why people get so angry and so upset about video games. Whereas maybe they don't get upset about, you know, politics or like you said, some of the companies that come under fire about genetically modified foods and stuff. That doesn't matter to them as much because they have much more of a direct connection with Call of Duty, with Far Cry, with, you know, Rocksmith, whatever it is. It's a much more personal relationship. So they take everything personally, too. And I think that's why people get all up in arms, like, let's make EA, you know, the most hated company in the world, rather than like a bank that scammed its investors, or, you know, something crazy like that. Because in their world, Far Cry or Call of Duty or Rocksmith is more important than that because it personally touched them. And I really believe that's the key of a lot of internet rage. It comes from a very vulnerable place, and it's easy to lash out when you feel like somebody's taken advantage of you when you're vulnerable. But I actually don't believe that companies are doing that. I think it's just the perception of I'm unhappy and I had higher hopes, you know? Yeah. We could be here and talk about that all day. I have a lot of theories, but I will stop there.
It just feels like it's a horde, not even a herd, but a horde mentality. It's like a few people which may say something worthwhile, but then someone will take it out of context or take it too far and take it to the simplest thing. I'll listen to like Jim Sterling and other people, and they'll make very valid points, but then some people will oversimplify the situation. And it just explodes. It's just like, well, wait, why? How did we get to this conclusion here? Oh, Jim Sterling said that. Jim, did you? No, not one bit.
Actually, it's how people interpreted it to their own means. I used to dislike Jim Sterling quite a bit. And in fact, my first meeting with him was extremely contentious on a live podcast on Games Radar, because I was working at Activision and he had been, saying terrible things about Activision as the soulless, faceless company. And I went after him about it live on the podcast, and he gave just as good as he got. And it was sort of that weird icebreaker moment of, all right, now I respect you in a way that I did not respect you before, and we're very friendly now. And I've started to read some of Jim's stuff, and I'm like, man, I hate to say this, but I agree with Jim Sterling. And then the more I read Jim Sterling, I'm like, yeah, you know, that's a really good way to put it. And so, yeah, it's very easy to take somebody like Jim Sterling out of context and twist it so that it proves your point, regardless of whether that was his actual point or not. But yeah, hi, Jim Sterling, if you're listening. I still love you, man.
You just made me picture like two elementary school boys like fighting, and then after the fight, they're best friends or their close friends.
I don't know how he feels that way about it, but that's how it was to me. It was friendly enough, like a year later, that we were at E3. It was the last day of E3, and Activision traditionally our bosses took us out for drinks as like, congratulations, E3 is over, we survived. And I was heading back to my car in the parking garage, and I saw Jim Sterling with a whole bunch of people, and they were sort of like, it was clear they hadn't seen each other for a while, and they were hugging each other goodbye and saying safe trip, you know, safe travels. And I just happened to be passing by while all of that was going. And I just, as a total stranger, just walked up to Jim Sterling and hugged him and said, hey, man, have a great trip. Have a great time. Bye. And I just kept walking. And Jim knew what I was doing. All of his friends looked at me like, who the hell was that just hugged you on the street in Los Angeles? And I never looked back. And I just always felt like that was the best joke I was able to play. And Jim just started laughing because then he had to explain who's this weird guy that came up and hugged you on the street of L.A. But yeah, so I guess it is kind of like that elementary school fight. There's lots of name calling, and then suddenly we hugged it out. Literally hugged it out.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
While we're kind of talking about these gamers kind of being, you know, kind of angry, kind of upset, I think it kind of somewhat has to do with like the state of gaming. Like, do you feel that things are a bit stagnant right now? I think that's where a lot of the EA and Activision, particularly Activision, since they pretty much at this point just rely on Call of Duty, Skylanders, and now Destiny, and maybe like one other franchise. Like, at least EA, they do have some variety. They are trying to bring back Mirror's Edge and doing different things with BioWare and so on. But it's just for where the gaming industry is right now, or since the new gen consoles launched, do you think things are a little bit stagnant right now?
Do you mean like creatively, like in terms of the variety of the offerings that are out there that, you know, are you suggesting stagnating, like you're not bringing out enough variety in games?
I would say that, and just the quality and just the creativity. But I would say just both of those areas.
Well, I think that you have to look at it from a certain. I don't necessarily agree that it's stagnant. To answer the core question, you know, Activision's plan has been for the last 5 years, go with only a handful of things and go deep. Like, I was there when Blur launched. Blur was one of my favorite racing games. It's still one of my favorite racing games of all time. I felt very fortunate that a game that I sort of had to talk to the public about was also something that I felt really strongly about. Because believe me, there are plenty of Activision games that came out that I had to talk about that I didn't have that kind of emotional investment in. But the truth was, those games didn't sell. You know, those mid games didn't sell. They were great games, but people were like, eh, I don't care. So it becomes clear that especially when you, if only a few things are selling, then that's what you focus on. And you try to do as much within those franchises as you possibly can. Skylanders is a good example of that. Was a risk. That was a huge risk. And they did it at a time when the company was not taking a lot of risks. They just decided to put all their eggs in that basket. And they were like, this basket has to succeed. What do we need to do to make this basket succeed? You know, Disney Infinity coming out after that was sort of like a high compliment, you know, in a lot of ways. So I think that when you go in with new hardware on top of that sort of that state of the industry, right? People will tell you they want revolution. This is my personal theory. I want revolutionary games. But what they really want is evolutionary games. They want 80% familiar and 20% shiny and new. You know, like, yes. You couldn't take Call of Duty and completely overhaul it every single year. People like that multiplayer experience. They like the familiarity. We don't have people complaining that baseball has not added a fifth base. We do not suddenly say, why isn't football played with randomly placed landmines on the field? That would spice stuff up. I'm sick and tired of seeing the same game. And yet the people that don't play the annual franchises, that they don't understand. To them, you look at Call of Duty and it's the same thing every year. But it's really not the same thing every year. Ask any Call of Duty fan and they will have strong ideas about which game did it right, which game is their favorite, which game the other game should be taking their leads from. They want more of the familiar. And by the way, for me, that answer is Black Ops 2. But, you have to hedge your bets. Okay, there's not a lot of people that are going to be buying this console first year. What do? Well, they did that whole Ghosts upgrade program. That was really smart. They knew that Call of Duty had to lead with a next-gen title last year and then again this year. And, you know, people are going to buy what is familiar to them in addition to what's new. I do believe that a game like Sunset Overdrive could have the kind of, that's a system seller, the way that Halo was a new IP and sold the original Xbox. That totally works. But people are sort of happy to do like Dead Rising 3. You know, look at what came out for launch of Xbox One. Dead Rising 3, Assassin's Creed 4. You know, we're dealing with mature franchises because people have already said, I want that. I want more of that. Give me more of that and give it to me prettier. So I don't really blame the companies for taking that that approach because the gamers themselves are rewarding that too. And they're saying, give me what I want. That's what I want. I think that you're going to find, as always, the most interesting creative ideas and the most, I never even considered that, is going to come from indies. So to me, the bigger question is, how can the majors get the indies on their platforms? Sony's obviously bending over backwards to do that. Microsoft has the ID at Xbox platform. I think the future is going to be just fine. You're going to see peaks and valleys in any industry. And right now, people are kind of like, oh, man, what did I, you know, there's not as much as I wanted for my new console. Even Rocksmith is, you know, hey, we put out a game on 360 and PS3 and PC last year. We announced this week it's coming out on PS4 and Xbox One. It's the same game. It's got a couple of next-gen perks, but the core game experience is the same. And you know what? The reaction was very good. People said, oh, yeah, I've been waiting for that to come out on my new platform. Okay, cool. So, giving the people what they want should never be a sin. But given the people what they didn't know they wanted is the ultimate artistic like trick, right? Like that's when the beauty happens. When we all get behind a game like Portal and we go, wow, I never even considered playing a puzzle game that way. And it was so satisfying when I played it. I want more of that. Well, of course you do. Because we all killed that cake is a lie joke. We all buried that thing into the ground. We loved it so much. So that can happen again. And I believe it will happen again really soon. We just have to see what it is. And people just have to have their expectations aligned and a little bit of understanding of the perspective of what a giant company has to do to survive in a marketplace like that and make safer bets to begin with. And then once you get more people, you know, when there's only a small install base of the console out there, you can't take a lot of risks. But when you've got like, you know, millions and millions of people, if you've got tens of millions as your install base, then you can start going, well, if we only sell, you know, 200,000 copies of that game, we could actually make a game that would be a success. But we can't put out a game that, oh, maybe we'd only sell 200,000 copies if there's only 500,000 units in homes. You know what I mean? You cannot count on 40% of the people that bought that game liking your interesting idea, especially if it's not something that's already in an established genre like a shooter, a fighter, or a driving game, you know? So There's a lot of things that go into it. But I've seen some people say recently, they're just like, yeah, I'm just bored. I'm just bored with games. I'm like, well, there's a ton of interesting games on 360 and PS3 that you probably didn't have time to play or that you can now pick up on Steam for really cheap. The games are out there. Play them because, you only have yourself to blame if you don't. It's not maybe the Xbox One will look better to you in the spring. Maybe your PS4 will be more of your best friend around Christmas. But in the meantime, go play other games on other platforms, you know, check out what's going on iOS.
But I think that's part of the disappointing part is that we're almost a year into this new gen. And there really hasn't been anything to sell either console. Like, I have an Xbox One. I'm looking for an excuse to get a PS4.
Sure.
But and I'm usually a console gamer, but this year I've spent way more time on PC, like you said, with the indie stuff and with I'm not a mobile guy, but Smite grabbed me this year. That's my most played game this year. The consoles have been so boring, and I've kind of gone to PC. If I didn't have an Xbox One, I really wouldn't be missing out on anything. I don't think Sony or Microsoft have done a great job of saying, okay, this is why you should have either of our consoles by now.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if Sunset Overdrive is going to be that game for people where it's like, this is an experience I didn't have before that I'm willing to buy this new thing. I really believe that Destiny was going to be a system seller too. You know, that's the kind of like, oh, well, I can get it on 360, but I know that they really designed it with these new boxes in mind, so let's do it with these new boxes. And I've been very happy playing Destiny. My wife and I are doing co-op every couple of days. We're sort of going a little bit at a time. I'm like level 17, so I haven't, capped out. And I know a lot of other people are like, there's a giant sandwich in front of me. I've got to eat the entire thing in one bite, And I'm like, no, I'm going to like just chip away at this. This is still a really good sandwich. Make sure that we put this in the fridge, because this is a damn good sandwich. And I don't feel the need to rush into eating the whole thing at once. But you know what I've been doing a lot on my Xbox One and on my PS4 both is Pinball FX2 from Zen Studios. That's an indie game that I love. I'm in a brutal high score battle with my friends on Xbox One to the point where right before Destiny came out, this is a dick move by me, I went through, found my friend, just targeted one of my friends in my friends list, found all of his scores, went through on every table that he owned, even bought a couple tables that I didn't own that he did, beat his score, didn't tell him, then wound up with 20 high scores on 20 different tables, then announced on Twitter the day before Destiny came out. I'm like, okay, I'm ready for Destiny. I destroyed all of Steve's scores. And Steve's like, what? So, like, I'm having plenty of fun. And honestly, that was because it was new to Xbox One, even though it was an established game that I knew I liked from other platforms, because I've got a lot of tables from Zen on Steam and iOS and all that stuff. That's how I was having fun. I didn't personally need the latest and the greatest thing to have fun. I just wanted to have fun with my friends, and this was the platform to do it. That said, the only thing I regret buying was Loco Cycle for Xbox One.
Oh, wow.
I played that preview at PAX, and I was like, this is awesome. And then I got it home, and I was like, it was awesome for 10 minutes, and oh, no. I really don't like it now. But I played it to the end because I was like, damn it, I bought this game. I'm going to finish it. And I did, slowly, painfully. But yeah, it's going to take a little while for people to hit their stream, certainly for the AAAs, it takes a while to learn the hardware, to understand what it can do, to figure out how you can push it. Think about a game like Gears of War for Xbox 360. That came in very late in the life cycle. That was 2 or 3 years into the Xbox 360, it's going to take us a while before things really... I didn't think it was 1 year, was it? Maybe it was 2006. I thought it was 2007, but maybe it was 2006. Yeah, you know what? You could be right. So, keep in mind, maybe that was a bet. Let me move the goalposts here. This is a game made on the Unreal Engine from the people that make the Unreal Engine. So there's something to be said about that. That could have been a factor.
Yeah, it was November 2006.
Oh, wow. All right. So, yeah, maybe we should. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we should have higher expectations for what we get this year.
Because from what I remember, it was like Oblivion in March. Yeah. And I think Dead Rising came out like September, and then there was like Rainbow Six Vegas and Gears of War like that October, that November. So I mean, that first year we did have like a dry period, definitely. But last gen we did have some really good games that first year. And this so far this year, I agree with you. It's between Steam, between Origin, between PS4, 360. Even if you gotta go back last gen, it's something to play. But as far as spending $400, $500,
yeah, justifying your purchase is a little harder to do.
Yeah, like, hey, you can play The Last of Us again, or hey, you can play GTA again. Like, yeah, thanks. I spent $400 to play GTA again. Thank you a lot.
Yeah. Again, some people really feel this compelling need to be on the lead lap at all times, and I think that's like, oh well, then yes, I need to have GTA 5 on the next platform because that's my new platform. And I've never been one of those people. I'm like, no, I played that. That's cool. Like, it would really take a lot to make me play a game a whole second time on a new platform if it was that close. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or, like, if it's easy, like pinball, which just happens to fit my lifestyle. You know? Yeah.
But with someone like Aaron, he didn't play The Last of Us on PS3, but he has a PS4. So that is
me if sure. You wish.
I mean, no, I'm saying that's a good thing for you. Like, you have the ultimate version.
There's definitely an audience for, like, I just didn't have the time to play it, or I missed it for whatever reason. And, hey, we think this experience is good enough that no matter what platform you're on, you'd want to play it. So here we go. Yeah, I think that's totally justified. And GTA 5 might be that way, too, because anything that came out last year did kind of get in the squeeze from hardcore gamers, where they may have had to make a tough choice and say, well, I can't buy that game for my current console because I'm trading in my current console to get my new console. And they are probably still thinking, like, I wish I could have done that. I wish I could have done that. I had a lot of people tell me, like, I'm happy to see that Rocksmith's coming out for PS4 because I sold my PS3 to get my PS4, so I can't play my old version of Rocksmith on PS3 anymore. And I'm like, okay, so there's definitely an audience. But, it, you know, it comes down to individual lifestyle and choices, you know.
Mm. It does, because, like, with GTA 5 coming out on PC, there's all sorts of possibilities. They've been talking about a video editing kind of thing where I guess you can make your own cutscenes or just simply, like, a clip show, things like that. But then there's also, like, the modding community. Hopefully they'll have a good-sized modding community for it. And with that, with GTA 5 and people's creativity, we can have so much potential. That's why...
Oh, for sure.
The PC side, I think, is kind of a stronger pull, especially if they say it's going to be on Steam Workshop. If they mention that, it's going to sell just like hotcakes. It's not going to be funny how fast it'll sell compared to the PS4 and Xbox One version.
I would buy that again. I would buy if they are, like, fully supporting mods. I know the last GTA had a lot of mods, but if they're, like, we're actually, you know, supporting it, here's some tools and stuff, I would, with day one, I would buy it on PC, even if it's going to take, you know, weeks or months for the mods to show up. I would definitely do that.
They kind of already have some sort of mod support right now because you can design your own games, your own races, so it's like a light modding sort of setup right there. So hopefully they kind of wake up, you know, we've got a lot of people playing more custom built races and other missions like that rather than the ones we make. Maybe we should kind of look into that. What else can we do? You know, should we allow them to make their own costumes, their own guns, to customize and put new skins, you know, even doing things like that? Or maybe as far as being able to develop their own cutscenes, if they have a video editing program already added in, well, why not allow them to be able to make their own cutscenes for their missions? I mean, if I could make or even play other people's stuff that could fit into, like, say, the single player, if not just at least the multiplayer, oh, I'd buy it in a heartbeat.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Go out and make that game.
Rockstar, come on.
Start Ginger Studios, Aaron.
Yeah, there you go.
And no, you make that game.
Spicy Ginger Studios, yes.
There you go, start that. But Dan, you said you're liking Destiny. That's cool. I like most gamers, I was a little bit disappointed with it, but I am having fun. I think you said I put like 30 hours into it already, so I can't say it's a bad game because I spent that much time with it. It's just, you know, the flaws at this point are obvious. I don't need to go over, like, the bad mission design and no story at all and stuff like that. But, it's just, you know, it's just good, dumb fun with friends, kind of like with GTA Online. It's just dumb, simple fun with friends. It has a heavy, like, I'm doing this with my buddy type thing. It's not a deep story or anything like that. But, like, what other games are you enjoying this year? Like, or have you enjoyed this year? Did you get into Titanfall or Watch Dogs or anything smaller?
Both of those. I got Titanfall. I enjoyed it for a while, and then I just sort of fell off. No fault of the game or my personal life, because right after Titanfall came out, that's when I moved from L.A. back to the Bay Area and switched jobs. So I still have friends that play Titanfall, but I didn't buy the DLC, so now I feel like, oh, now I'm a burden on them if I try to play with them. I have started Watch Dogs. I'm a couple of hours into it. I really like it. It was a lot more GTA style open world than I thought it was going to be for whatever reason. And that's not a bad thing, but now I know, like, okay, I need to be in that mood to go play that game. So I'm still on for that. I've never been much of an Assassin's Creed guy, but working here, I got a copy of Assassin's Creed 4. I started that. I got lost for the first hour of the game. No spoilers here, but you start on an island, and I could not figure out how to get off the island. So I just kept wandering around, and I'm like, damn it! Where? So I haven't gone back to that. Trying to think of what else I've been playing. I've been playing, I play a lot on iOS because I commute. So I play pinball games on iOS. I've been playing the Street Pass games on 3DS are one of my favorite things in the world. Very simple, but like opening a present every day. Ooh, who did I meet? Who am I going to see? I love doing that. I bought Always Sometimes Monsters, which is an indie game on Steam. A friend of mine made that, so I picked that up, and it's sort of a 16-bit SNES-style RPG where you have to make hard decisions. It's totally one of those moral, ethical kind of indie games, and that's cool. I've
I've
been
heard really good
playing.
things about that game. That's one every time I see it, and it seems like, you know what? I hate saying it's like as soon as it's on sale, I'm getting it.
Yeah, I think it's only a $10 game, and it is an indie studio, so I don't know, how deep the discounts will go on that. But I also have an ulterior motive for that because I wrote a song for that game, and I don't know if it made it into the game. But he contacted me and said, "Hey, do you want to could you give me some music?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I suck at writing songs, but here's like an old Irish, here's an old Irish folk tune that I happen to know that is copyright free that I will gladly record for you." And then he made me a character in the game apparently as a hobo. And I've been looking for myself. I haven't found myself yet, and I don't know where, if I do, if I show up in the game. But he says that I do. But I don't know. But for things that I wasn't personally invested in, I've been buying things on Steam when they go on sale to fill out my collection. So like Mortal Kombat, Mortal Kombat 9, as it were. That was like $5 last week. So I'm like, yes, I would like that permanently on my PC.
And do you attend to play it, or you just like having it around?
It's both. I'm still playing it on 360, and I do intend to finish playing it on 360. But like one day, my 360 will not be my primary thing. And if I get the itch to want to plug in a fight stick, I'm going to plug it into my PC and I'm going to play it on there. Like that's kind of the way I start looking at it is like when the PC games go on sale, then it's insurance for the future. So yeah, I probably won't play it on PC right away. But like I'm playing Street Fighter 4 on Steam. I fired that up recently and really had a blast with that. Because again, it's like, well, it's Ultra Street Fighter 4. It's like the super duper, absolutely everything has been patched edition, with all extra characters and stuff like that. And yeah, so I got the itch to do that and went ahead and did it. But yeah, I mean, I'm not playing a lot of huge game. I haven't been buying a lot of games because I haven't had the time for a lot of things. And my wife and I play Star Wars: The Old Republic every week. We have like a standing double date with another couple. And my wife really likes MMOs. We played City Heroes. We played World of Warcraft. And we it's just being lifelong Star Wars fans, we're like, yeah, that's one of the one we've been waiting for. And it's very WoW-like. If you haven't played it, it's like World of Warcraft in, Tatooine. But when Destiny came out, she's like, that's what I'm waiting for. Like, I want RPG MMO style elements on a shooter. And I went, okay, great, then that's our lives. So kind of that's our default right now is like, is it time to play games? You feel like playing a game? Yeah. What do you want to play? Well, let's play Destiny. We haven't hit the level cap, so let's go do it while we still have fresh missions and stuff. And I'm like, okay. So I'm playing Destiny on both Xbox One and PS4 because I had different groups of friends that wanted to play on each platform. So that's kind of taking up a lot of my free time lately because I have to. I thought I was going to get away from that. When I was at Activision, I would do community nights for Call of Duty, and Call of Duty comes out for 6 platforms, then I have to sort of build up my multiplayer character on 6 platforms. And there's no like calling the developer and saying, can you just make me level 50 and unlock everything? You know, they don't do that. So you know, I would show up on Wii U and people were like, how come you're level 5, dude? The game's been out for like 3 weeks. And I'm like, well, because I've been, you know, like last week I played on PS3 and the week before that I played on Xbox One and next week I'm going to play on PC and I have a rotation. You know, my job is literally not to play every single version of Call of Duty on every platform that's ever been put out.
Yeah, I think the real question is, why are you playing that on Wii U? I think that's the real question.
the representative of the company.
Well, not you. I'll say the person who asked you that question, who actually bought the game. Like, what the hell are you doing?
It is my fervent belief that if you're buying a Nintendo platform, 75% of the reason you're buying a Nintendo piece of hardware is because you like Nintendo software.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I don't know why you would choose to play. Like, Treyarch did a really good job of doing Wii U for Black Ops 2 on Wii U, and then they also were in charge of the version of Ghosts. And these worked, okay? The graphics were actually better than I thought they were going to be, but the audience for those games, they're incredibly loud and very sparse. Like they would demand that Wii U be treated with the same respect as PlayStation 3 and Xbox One. And so I'm like, okay, cool. I'll give you 5 days notice. We're gonna go do this community night. Please show up and I will play with you. The guy from Activision will come and play with you in Black Ops 2, in Call of Duty Ghosts, whatever, you know, I'll do it with you. And I would show up and there would be nobody that showed up. No messages, nobody coming into my lobby, nobody saying, glad I found you. It was more about, you need to give us the same attention, but we don't actually want to put in the effort on our side. So it was super frustrating. But those 5 people, because really, I heard from like maybe 5 people that were really passionate about playing Ghosts and wanted me to be involved with them. It was just like, that was their world. And they didn't understand that like most people had chosen to play that game on a different platform. I will say that I no longer have a Wii U because the way that, you know, One of Swords as a brand, that's not a name I want to take with me anyway. OneofSwords.com is still owned by Activision. And again, I'm not angry about leaving that name behind. That was the plan all along. If I didn't work out, they wanted me to come up with a name that they could still use if I left. And it took me 4 years to leave. So I, you know, success. But I had to give them, I had to sell them back my Wii U that I had bought because the name One of Swords is tied to that specific piece of hardware.
Oh, wow.
You cannot train, you know, like the way that you can download your gamer tag on multiple Xboxes or you can sign in on different devices with your PlayStation. You can't do that on the Wii U. There is only one Wii U that has the One of Swords gamer tag valid on it, and I had to sell it back to them. When I left. So I was like, well, I'm not going to bother to replace the Wii U. There's not a lot that I want to do, and I'm having fun with my 3DS, and, you know, woo, you know. But, yeah, you'd be amazed at the intensity of the people that play Call of Duty on Wii U. They're very serious about it, and they don't understand why everyone around them is playing not Call of Duty.
All 10 of those guys are very passionate.
And I was just like, what if we get all 10 of you in the same lobby? Like, that will solve this problem.
They hate each other, though. They keep killing each other.
Stop shooting. Stop shooting. This is your friend. This is the only person that understands that you want to play Call of Duty on with you. No, I have to. Headshot. No scope. You know, okay, relax. So anyway.
So besides Sunset Overdrive, is there any game you're like really wanting to play or dying for this year or maybe the early part of 2015?
I'm looking forward to Far Cry 4, but I want to see if I can finish Far Cry 3 first because I haven't started Far Cry 3. You know, I'd be interested to check out Call of Duty, but you will excuse me for not being super excited about it, only because I've been drinking the Call of Duty Kool-Aid for 4 years, and I would kind of like to try something else now, thank you. That said, everything that I've seen about Advanced Warfare looks really cool.
Actually, it does. I'm surprised Activision was nice enough to release a trailer today just for us, since you were coming on. And yes. We saw that trailer, and that trailer actually looked really good. Like the graphics, the gameplay. I still, in the back of my mind, I keep thinking you guys copy Titanfall. I'm sorry. That's just in the back of my mind. I will
lightly break my NDA by saying that this game was in development for so long. I got to meet the guys from Sledgehammer. I got to interview them every once in a while. And they're here in the Bay Area in Foster City. And they're really nice guys. But those plans were in motion long before Titanfall tipped its hand. So it is kind of unfortunate that you go, oh, I get it. Like robots and robot
That's
people.
A huge coincidence. But I mean, it does happen in Hollywood, though, I guess, because like Deep Impact, Armageddon.
Exactly. And sometimes just get guys that are on the same path. And of course, if you're playing with Future War, right? And, you know, Black Ops 2 was Future War, and Ghost was a near Future War with a different lens around it. But, you know, if that seems to be like, hey, this is where our franchise is exploring, it's not crazy to think that two people may get the same thing. But yeah, the game industry does not move nearly as fast as the people who would accuse you ripped off them. That game came out all the way in March. It's like, no, they were talking about concepts and building prototypes for Advanced Warfare like 2 years before that, you know, like Call of Duty plans way in advance. They can't do things that big. They can't deliver those kind of spectacles on that scale unless you're planning way in advance. So yeah, it's cool that Titanfall had its moment, and of course it'll be impossible not to compare those two games. I don't know which one will be better. I'll play both and figure out which one I like more, if either one. Mm-hmm. But it's really not a question of you ripped them off. It's we had a similar idea, and we're not going to abandon it, because if we think that we can do that idea in a really satisfying way, of course we're going to go ahead and do that idea. Mm-hmm. And they did their idea their way, and we liked it too. You know, like it's not. Yeah, as usual, it's not this life or death struggle. It's not this, how dare you? It's like saying, you know, I don't know. Like you said, there's two asteroid movies. Oh, God. You know, I love Die Hard, so I can never enjoy any other action movie. You know, I already have an action movie. Or as I like to tease my wife, she's a heavy reader, you know. I'm like, she goes, I want to go to the bookstore. I'm like, you already have a book. You know, if you can't have more than one book or more than one action movie or more than one Future War video game, you know, it seems kind of silly when you back up and think of it that way. It's how are they doing the things? Where do they overlap and where do they not overlap? And what did they have to say creatively about it? And that's, you know, mm-hmm. that's okay.
And we definitely know which one has better graphics between the two.
Oh, yeah.
Call of Duty looked gorgeous. And, you know, obviously games aren't all about the graphics, but the Titanfall looked good, but
I was gonna say,
Call of Duty looked great.
Any slouch, you know. I'll be very curious to see if the footage that we've seen from Call of Duty looks that good when it's actually running on the game.
Of course.
You know, when you're looking at trailers, you're looking at an accurate but optimized version of the experience. And, you know, let's see how it, I always say that, like, you know, before you fall in love or condemn a game, you got to play it for yourself on your own hardware in your own house. That's when you should actually make up your mind about how you feel about it. Everything else is anticipation or skepticism, but you shouldn't stop at that point. You've got to get hands on. There is no substitute for experience.
Especially when there's a PC version, because they could just have this like ultra PC and have it on the highest settings.
3360 by 2410. Yeah, like what? We're running a crazy resolution. Enjoy, but you'll get it at 1080p.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as we kind of wrap up here, let's talk a little bit more about Rocksmith.
Sure.
Like, so I was interested in learning guitar last year, and I had a guitar. I got like, you know, a cheap $40-$50 Amazon guitar.
Sure.
Just because, you know, I wanted to see if I would actually learn it. I didn't want to spend $300 on a guitar then just have it sit in a corner. Right. Then I realized it hurts my fingers. Like, you need
that is the problem.
I need 12 fingers to play guitar. Like, what is happening? Like, am I do you have extra fingers that I don't know about? I don't get why you want me to make a G and a B and a whatever like that. It hurts. I don't want to do it.
Playing guitar is an awful lot like playing Tony Hawk. You get muscle memory. Your fingers kind of learn what to do on their own. And once you get used to some of that repetition, it is a little bit of a grind. But I swear to God, you can make a bar chord. You can make that open F chord. That will happen for you one day. You make a very good point about starting with the cheapest possible instrument. That is a problem. It's Sometimes it's just, ow, there are metal wires on my fingers that I have to press down, and that you will toughen up your fingers over time and take it slow. But I also don't recommend going for the cheapest possible guitar you can find, because they're usually made like crap, and that makes it harder for them to be played. So if you are in the market for a new guitar, I actually wrote just a blog post on my personal blog. It's bit.ly/firstguitar. That's 1ST guitar. And I have a pretty comprehensive, so you have no idea what you're looking for, but you want to buy a guitar and you don't want to get ripped off. And I actually do recommend buying like a $300 guitar, because that way, even if you don't stick with it, you can then resell it for $250 and you haven't lost much in value. But nobody's going to want to buy your $50 guitar. You're basically going to have to throw that away when you're done, or turn it into an art project.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually why I got a black one. I was like, I would just paint on this.
Right.
If I don't, play it, if I don't like it, I'll just put it in a corner, paint on it, whatever. It's 50
I'm
bucks.
A guitar snob. So I call them GSOs. They're guitar shaped objects. They're not actually guitar. But again, I've been playing for like 20 years, and, having no kids, but being in a rock band and a cover band, a successful one for a couple of years, that's where my money went. Like, well, I need to buy another guitar. I need to trade these two in for a really good one, So I've been horse trading like that for a while. So, but yeah, Rocksmith, did you stay with it? Did you give up?
I gave up. I did it on YouTube for like maybe a month and a half. And that's like, and I got some notes. I was getting a little bit, but I was just like, I think I'd rather just do piano. I think I'd just rather buy a keyboard. Cause
You did 40. Did you play every day for that month and a half?
For the most, I was at like 5 days out of the week. I can't say 7 days out of the week.
Cause one of the things that Rocksmith recommends is the 60-day challenge. If you play for an hour a day for 60 days, mm-hmm. and they don't have to be concurrent days, but it has to be 60 days total. So yes, you're allowed to take like the weekends off or whatever. The results are pretty dramatic. I know that people are very skeptical of videos that they see online, but the people in our sort of like testimonial videos really did take the 60-day challenge. And you can see how terrible they were when they started and how competent they are at the end of those 60 days. So I will say that Rocksmith does work if you really have no idea how to play guitar. If you've never picked up a guitar before, you just look at it and say, that looks cool. I wish I could do that. This game doesn't take any prior knowledge. One of the first video lessons that you can take is how to put the strap on the guitar. I mean, it really starts from the basics, so you don't have to feel afraid of like asking, well, I should know this stuff. I see people put on guitar straps backwards all the time. I have a friend who every time he puts on a guitar, whether it's a real one or a Guitar Hero controller, he wears it like a necklace. He looks like Flavor Flav. He's like, I've got this giant thing hanging around my head. He just put my arm through the strap so that it only rests on one shoulder, and he goes, oh, that's a lot more comfortable. I'm like, yes, of course it is, because that's the right way to do it, you jackass.
I was going to ask, have you told him, or are you just laughing Absolutely. At him in your head?
No, I told him every single time, and that's the thing. He's a grown man. I should not have to tell him 5 times not to wear it like a necklace. But the game is much more patient than I am. Let me put it that way. The game is going to be like, here, just if you want to watch this again, go ahead. We're not going to judge you.
I want the version of you yelling at me. Like, damn it, damn it, Vince, you're doing it wrong. That's not how you do a G. I told you this 20 times, you asshole.
Jesus! Yeah, no. That's not going to sell any copies. That's not going to be available.
I need Drill Sergeant version. That's what I need.
Here. There you go, Vince. I've been on your case.
Do you know
damn
how to play,
it, Vince,
Aaron?
Come on, let's go. Come on.
You're just going to yell at it. Do you know how to play guitar, Aaron?
Yes, I completely know how to play such an instrument.
I do.
Are you saying that so that I don't pitch you on Rocksmith, or are you saying that just to make the audience think that you're better than Vince?
Little column A, little column B.
Fair enough.
I mean, I do feel a little bit like a bum for not knowing. It feels like everyone like at a certain age should know at least one extra language and know a different and know at least one musical instrument.
Or maybe some sort of skill.
Noble goals. Those are noble life goals. But I will say that, like, we've had people come to Rocksmith who are like, you know what? The kids finally moved out. I'm 40. I'm starting to think about what I never got a chance to do. I'm going to do this, and they use Rocksmith, and that works for them. So don't feel like there's an expiration date. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm 25. What have I done with my life? You know, like, we have people that are much older going like, hey, I just, you know, now I have the time and now I have the money to buy a really nice guitar. So I'm going to go do that. And thankfully, they also have the money to buy our DLC. So that's good for us, too. But yeah, like, Rocksmith doesn't assume any prior knowledge, but if you bring any prior knowledge to Rocksmith, then you can, it'll let you kind of skip ahead. It'll listen to you as you play, and it goes, oh, all right, so you already know how to do these chords. Now let's throw stuff a little bit more difficult at you. So as you play Rocksmith, it's actually tracking how good you are, and it will raise the difficulty only when it thinks that you're competent. And if you're not competent, then this is by a song-by-song basis. If you want to learn a song by Foo Fighters, you might be really good at that chord progression and just the way that that works. And so it'll ramp up your difficulty faster than that. But if you are doing something, you know, on a song that you're less familiar with, then it will be like, okay, we'll just take this at your pace. I think it's remarkably forgiving and super patient in a way that, yeah, like a drill sergeant like me would not be super patient at all. But yeah, so I mean, it's the same experience on any platform. And yeah, come November 4th, it will be out on PS4 and Xbox One. But if you have the PS3 version or you have the Xbox 360 version and you bought DLC, you will also own that DLC on the new platform within that console family. So that's kind of nice. Like if people are thinking of upgrading, you don't have to worry about it. You're not going to have to rebuy the same songs that you've already said, oh, I really like that song, I want to learn it. You know, your progress will not move forward, but you'll be able to, if you're on 360, you can download on Xbox One. If you're on PS3, you can download on PS4. So, you know, if people are thinking about it or wondering, well, why would I bother to do that? I have so much invested. Everything you have invested in the old platform, you'll also own on the new.
And I'm completely ignorant when it comes to music games. So what is like Rocksmith itself? It's obviously a disc, it's the game, but I'm guessing there's like an amp, and the amp goes into the console and the other amp goes into a guitar, or is it just you watching it?
No, you actually plug a real guitar in through a custom USB cable that we call the Real Tone cable. You plug the guitar directly into your console or your PC, and it uses the computer as the amplifier. In fact, there's a whole subsection in the game that lets you decide, I want this kind of tone. You can play with all these different effects pedals, add chorus and delay and distortion and all that fun stuff. And then each of the songs that you download, or each of the songs in the game, even the ones that come with the game, because like 50 songs, 55 songs that come with the game, we have the tone that we've already built for what you hear on the record. So you can then save that and play that in any other mode. Like I just want this like Mastodon tone, or I want this Aerosmith tone. And so, you know, great, that's the sound that you know from Walk This Way, and you get that automatically. So the idea is that you can bring any guitar with a quarter inch jack, even if it's an acoustic with a pickup in it, any guitar or electric bass, and you just say, I want to learn how to play that song. And so the game says, all right. So it's totally like as if you sat down with me and you said, I like the Ramones, I like punk, this is what I want to learn. And there you go. And it'll say, okay, well, let's try to learn this. So it's unique in that you kind of, it's not like a structure the way that you used to, like some Guitar Hero or something, where it's like, you're going to be a star, kid, we're going to have to ask you to learn these five songs, then you're going to go play a show, and we're going to see. The first Rocksmith was like that. The second Rocksmith is not. The new one is like, what interests you? What's going to motivate you to want to play? And then you go off and you do that, and it says, okay, here's what we heard. Here's some lessons that we would recommend. Or like we threw you something to see if you could handle this and you couldn't really handle it. So why don't you review the lesson for that thing that we wanted you to handle? So it's very organic. It's very reactive to what you actually do. But it's, you know, there's no special guitar to buy. There's no plastic controller. It's a real guitar that you can buy at Guitar Center, or that maybe like your friend has in the closet and you can just borrow from them to check it out. I'm a big fan of, like, I wonder if my uncle has a guitar that he doesn't use that I could just buy new strings and check it out. Obviously, we're partners with Epiphone and Gibson, so we would always say, hey, Epiphone and Gibson, that's what you want to do. But at the same time, you know, if you've got a guitar lying around, as long as it's not a $50 Amazon special, Vincent, then yeah, go ahead. And the game sort of just teaches you at your own pace, which is a great thing. But yeah, there's kind of nothing else on the market like this, because you are using a real guitar and yet you're plugging it into a 360 or a PS3 or a PC. You know, we know a lot of people play on laptops. It's also out on Mac, for what that's worth. If you buy the Steam version, it works on both PC and Mac. So both Windows and Mac, I should say. So
I've only heard good things about it. You are tempting me.
Say about it. You know, I'm the spokesman, but I'm also a client. Honestly, like, I have been playing for a long time, but I've plateaued. Like, I'm a rhythm guitarist primarily, but so I'm not very good at lead at all, and I have stubby little fingers, and I don't trust myself, and you know, so I'm using Rocksmith to sort of like get comfortable with playing lead. So even though I know what I'm doing when I pick up a guitar, I know what I'm doing within my own little world. I don't know what I'm doing in terms of other styles of guitar that Rocksmith also covers. So I've been having a lot of fun learning how to be a better bassist, which I had, you know, a little handle on. But lead is still this like unexplored country to me. And I'm using Rocksmith to sort of get over my plateau and be a more well-rounded guitarist, rather than just, you know, since I know the basics and I'm actually an intermediate and I've played live on stage and stuff like that, but I've still got a long way to go and there's still a lot of things I'd like to learn. So Rocksmith is my answer for that.
Mm-hmm. And obviously rock is in the name, but are there other genres in it? Like, is it more like a blues? Is someone more like a BB King or maybe more of a Little Richard type, or is it mainly more like 80s, you know, Kiss or Led Zeppelin type?
It is primarily, I will say that we have a lot of 90s rock in our library. We do have, and again, some of our DLC is generated by user requests, and some of it we have to look at what's selling. You know, if there's a lot of 90s rock selling, then we start looking at the requests for 90s rock, and maybe we should prioritize that. You know, Foo Fighters was very, very popular for us because, you know, again, 90s rock, late 90s, early 2000s. That's what a lot of the people grew up listening to that are buying Rocksmith now. We do have classic rock represented. We have Queen and Boston and Iron Maiden. We do have some blues. We have some Albert King with Stevie Ray Vaughan. There's like one track that we have, a B.B. King. I think we have Thrill Is Gone by B.B. King. We have some funk. I was first in line to pick up Good Times and We Want the Funk by Parliament. I'm a big funk fan, and I hope that we can bring out some more. But, you know, it depends on what the audience is telling us that they want. We released our first country song, Sweet Dreams by Roy Buchanan, which most people know as the end credits to The Departed. We did a surf rock pack recently, which went over really well. We had Miserlou from Pulp Fiction, you know, the opening credits of Pulp Fiction by Dick Dale, and Wipeout and Walk Don't Run by The Ventures. And these are really fun songs. A lot of people, the nicest compliment was, I didn't know I wanted to learn that song until you gave me the opportunity to learn that song. Our big thing over the summer was what we called Boxsmith, where we took five classical pieces that everybody knows. Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata and In the Hall of the Mountain King by Grieg, and rearranged those for popular guitar. So instead of just doing a straight classical version, like, it's Flight of the Valkyrie or Ride of the Valkyries by Richard Wagner, as if it were a 1980s metal song. And In the Hall of the Mountain King as this cool, like, sort of off-kilter Latin jazz thing almost. And then Mozart as if it was a swing song, a gypsy jazz swing song. So, you know, like, there are other genres represented, and we do listen to requests, and we're trying to get more blues artists. We're trying to get outside of the realm of rock. But it definitely does live up to its name. Most of the content is commercially successful rock and roll from, like, the 60s through modern day. You know, we've got Slash. We've got some major, major guys coming out between now and the end of the year. I cannot reveal any of these names, but believe me, it will not be you going, who's that? Like, everybody we have on deck from now to the end of the year is an A-list artist that you're going to be like, oh, wow, that's great. Yeah, I know their stuff, and maybe I want to learn how to play that. So, yeah. But we're not planning to do like an offshoot of just Bluesmith or just Countrysmith. But there is a Facebook group dedicated to getting us to put more blues in the game.
Okay.
So the people are serious about it. And we're serious about it too. We are looking into it. A lot of it, you know, we could want a song in the game, but if the artist doesn't give us permission, we can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes that's about money. to be completely honest, like, we have a budget and we have to work within that budget. And sometimes the artists are like, well, you're going to have to put several zeros on the end of that number. And we're like, we just can't do that. Like, we would never make back the investment. Other times there are artists that are just like, I'm not interested. I don't want my songs. I wouldn't want my songs used in a commercial. I wouldn't want them used in a movie, and I'm not going to have them used this way either. I don't like it. No, sir. Good day. And that's it. And so when they say no, we do go back to them over time and say, like, hey, we came to you like last year about this, but we're still interested. Do you guys feel any differently about music and video games? Or do you know more about Rocksmith and how this isn't really just, you know, it's not just pressing colored buttons? And I say that as somebody who really enjoys the music games where you just press colored buttons. But it's, you know, some of the artists we've seen, like Prince is an artist who has gone on the record in 2009 saying, I don't want my music used in Guitar Hero and Rock Band because it's just playing at playing music. I think that it's important that people pick this up and do it for real. And I would rather have people just play my songs with a real guitar and learn how to play music and become a musician. And we're like, hello, Prince. Hello. That's exactly what we do. Can we talk? And we do not currently have Prince's permission, but we're still asking, you know. There's a lot of artists that people want that we are continually going back. And I'm happy to say that some of those artists that people have been asking for us for a long time are the artists that we've recently secured deals with, and we're going to be able to bring them. But it's often a very long process to get some of the artists on board. And some of the older songs, you know, like, well, say the songwriter had some of the music, then the other four guys in the band, they also have a part of that song. That means all four of them have to agree to the song being in Rocksmith. Then maybe one of those, maybe the guitarist gave his nephew when he was born like 1% of that song. So the kid would always have royalties coming in from his uncle, right? And so he would be able to go to college based on the royalties of 1% of that song.
Wow.
Now that kid's family also has to give us permission to have this work. If any one of those people says no, we are not allowed to use the song. So it takes a long time to get these people on board sometimes. And it's a drag, but it's the reality of, you know, we want to use the real songs that people really know. And this is the recording of the song that you understand, that, you know, that motivated you to want to pick up a guitar in the first place. So it's not as simple as like, hey, Led Zeppelin, we like your songs. We're going to use them now.
Yeah.
Like Led Zeppelin has to say, we give you permission and here's how much you have to pay us and all those kind of things. And so, you know, if they're just not into it, they're just not into it. There's some, believe me, there's some like local bands that we would like, you know, bands from the Bay Area that we do not currently have permission for. And it crushes us because we're like, we're hometown here. We want to do you guys right. And they're like, just not interested, but thanks for asking. You know, they've given this definitive no's. And so we have to wait like another 6 months before we go back and go, any change, anything different in your world? Like, do you want to do this now? And, you know, so.
Look, bro, I'm not looking to sell out to your big company. I am real into the music. I do my band. I work at Target. Fuck you. I do what I want.
I kind of understand where they're coming from, though, because sometimes they're like, you know what, we haven't really gotten to our sound yet. You know, I think that's a saying.
Oh, no. When I say local bands, I don't mean local bands playing dive bars. I mean like local legends that come out of.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
I mean big bands with record contracts that are just as big as the other artists that we've approached, but we want them in more because of the local pride. And okay. We cannot. Oh, yeah, no, just like, hey, guys, we're Vile Scum. Remember, there's a $2 cover tonight. You know, Anal Leakage is coming up next. They're a great band. You know, like, no, it's not that kind of a deal. Yeah, so that's an ongoing thing. And you know, some people were surprised that we announced Rocksmith for PS4 and Xbox One. But, you know, it's essentially the same experience, but, you know, 1080p visuals, and there's a couple of perks for the next generation. But it's primarily the same experience that people have had and has worked on other platforms. And they're like, I don't know why you just didn't do a new game this year. And I'm like, I thought after coming out of Activision that people didn't want the same game every year. And I say, you know, like Rocksmith was really not designed to be an annual franchise. Well, you know, hopefully we'll get a chance to make another game when we have a good enough idea that would warrant another game. We certainly have lots of little ideas that we'd like to implement. But, you know, Rocksmith is now a weekly franchise. We are really focused on bringing out between 3 and 5 new songs every week for DLC. And again, they're optional. You can buy them in a bundle. You can buy them as singles, whatever works for you. Or maybe you don't buy them at all and you just wait till next week. But we're constantly trying to add variety to the DLC library, and there's a lot in there. There's over 400 songs now. We're closing in on 500. Jeez. I think we might get that before the end of the year. So it's, you know, there's something there that you're like, not only do I like that song, but I'd like to learn how to play that song. And so that's kind of what we're focusing on, is now that you know that our method works, what's going to inspire you to keep playing? Is it hearing from this band that we don't have yet, or this band that we don't have yet? Well, we'll work on trying to get those bands to come on board. And it is nice to see that some attitudes have changed. You know, we've gone back to bands 2 and 3 times, but the fourth time, they've actually said, yes, now we're interested. And you never know what's going on in their world. You know, maybe they're planning a reunion tour. Maybe they're out of money.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they played Rocksmith, or they've got a friend that plays Rocksmith, and they go, that's pretty cool. We should totally be in there. And we have had some bands approach us and go, we love what you're doing. We want to be in the game. You know, that's the beautiful thing. But that doesn't happen all the time. It doesn't even happen most of the time, I'll say. Usually we knock on their door and say, hi, guys, this is what we do. Do you want to be involved? And they say yes or no. So,
yeah. And I know you have a limited time today. I just want to ask one final question, which is a little of a big one. So feel free if you want to be brief. But I'm sure there are a ton of people listening, and they're just thinking, oh, wow, sounds like he has the best, you know, best job ever. If someone wanted to be in like a community developer, community manager, you know, anything sure. like that, like what would you recommend to them? Like, do they have to live in San Francisco or LA or Seattle? Like, what are some tidbits you would give to them?
Well, keep in mind, I've only been doing this for 5 years. My previous job in the media, I was doing for 15, and I wound up writing a book about it that answers exactly this question for my previous job, which is, how do I get a job reviewing video mm-hmm. games?
Yep.
CriticalPathBook.com. So for community management, you don't necessarily have to be in any one place. The nature of online communities is that they are scattered. So a community leader can also be, you can certainly make your impression from wherever you are. Most of the best community people come out of the community itself, right? Like if you are currently posting in the official forums and you're a helpful guide and you're somebody who's helping answer other people's questions when the official people are not around, that's going to get you noticed. Being a community VIP is the fastest track to being a community manager, because they need to see that you're a trustworthy person who understands what it is that makes that game tick and makes that community tick before they go any further. Very famously, Deej from Bungie. Deej was a blogger who would blog about Halo, and he had very strong opinions about what made the Halo community tick and why this was great, that we should all play together and work together, and we shouldn't be tearing each other down. We're all into the same thing. We can be competitive. We can have fun. We can shoot each other in the head. But at the end of the day, a positive community is the best community. And Bungie said, we totally agree. Would you like to work with us? So you need to be a community leader before you can be a community manager. And that means maybe you're into League of Legends. Well, okay, Riot is in Santa Monica. So you want to make, you know, you don't have to move to Santa Monica. You have to impress them from wherever you are so that they invite you to Santa Monica. And believe me, if you want to be a community manager, they'll if there's an opening and a company wants you and you apply for it, they'll pay to move you out there. You know, yeah. Like I was my relocation was taken care of. I had a budget within that I had to work within, but when Activision hired me to come to Activision, they paid for me to move there. And then when Ubisoft hired me and I said, well, I want to relocate, but I'm currently in LA, they said, we will relocate you. So don't worry about where you are. Worry about who you are and how you look. Mm-hmm. You know, I have community VIPs in Rocksmith. They don't necessarily do my bidding. You know, they still speak for themselves, but I know that I can rely on them when I have information that if I tell them, hey, I see a lot of misunderstanding about this. I want you to understand what the truth is, or, you know, we're going to be talking about this in a week, or do you want to be part of this event that I'm planning? You know, that kind of stuff. You don't have to kiss ass. You just have to be genuine in your enthusiasm for the game. And if your goals for the game's community aligns with the company's goals for the community, that's the best way to get noticed. So, you know, post like a human being. Don't get involved in flame wars. Be a calming influence when you see flame wars. Disseminate the correct information when people have questions. Don't be defensive and reactionary and look for fights. You know, just sort of deputize yourself without overstepping your bounds and be the positive person in the community. Then the community will notice. And, you know, there are developers everywhere. I applied for a job at Gearbox. I wasn't the right person for that thing, but they're in Plano, Texas, you know, or wherever the hell they are. Maybe not Plano. Maybe they were Plano. But, you know, like, I was thinking, like, do I really want to move to Texas? Yes, I was going to have to move to Texas if I wound up getting that job. They went with somebody else, so I didn't have to deal with it. But that was part of it. It was like, oh, God, like, I would love to work at Gearbox. What a great company. And you know, do I want to make that move? So you have to keep that in mind. But there's no reason not to be a positive force in the community. If you know, if it's a Microsoft developer and they're up in Seattle, do you like rain? You know, that's part of your consideration. But you don't have to move there before you get the job. Earn yourself the job and earn yourself the trust of the developer and the community. Then you can be a community ambassador. For what it's worth. Ubisoft has community managers. Like, I'm at the dev team in Rocksmith. We're in San Francisco. You know, the other dev teams are in Montreal or they're in France or wherever they are. But I'm the community developer. But my community management team is actually in North Carolina because there's a separate office in North Carolina. So we just talk in email and we talk in instant messenger and stuff. And so my forum moderator, who actually helps run the forums when I'm not around to chime in, she's actually in charge of the forum. I just sort of chime in on her watch, really. She's out in North Carolina. Or no, she's in San Diego. And then the person that helps me with the chat every week is in North Carolina. So you don't, you know, you'd be surprised where you can do community management. It's not geographically specific until they offer you a job. And even when they offer you a job, you might find that you could work remotely depending on the nature of the position. So that's it. You know, prove that you can speak like a human being and that you're a force of good in the community. That's the best thing to say when you apply for the job.
So you is no I mean, this isn't an interest for me particularly. I'm just kind of asking for the audience. So I'm not sure if the job has mentioned things like, oh, by the way, you need to have a bachelor's in communications or English or journalism, or is that that's not an issue with the community type jobs?
Not necessarily. It certainly helps if you can prove that you have some background in communication. For me, it was that I was used to speaking to hundreds of thousands of people every time I wrote an article. And I was comfortable going on camera and I was comfortable doing podcasts and, you know, that I could be trusted. But that ultimately that I spoke English, you know, that or not even that I spoke English, that I spoke gamer English, that I understood what was important to the gamer audience because I had been speaking from the gamer's perspective for 15 years as a member of the media. You will find that a lot of the higher level community positions do go to people with media experience. Abby over at Titanfall, obviously she was at G4, you know, so she knows how to speak to large groups of people at a time and she knows how to communicate on that level. You do not necessarily need a degree in order to do that. You may simply be a natural, or you may have other relevant experience that is equivalent. I did not go to college for I went to college for audio production, believe it or not. I was going to be a record producer or a DJ, and my minor was writing. So I wound up going into writing because that's where the opportunities presented themselves. A lot of what I do now is writing-based. A lot of what I do is also media-based. Sometimes I feel like a DJ. Hey, guys, here's what we're doing today. Here's my talk set, you know? So it's not required. It certainly won't hurt. You know, you never know what any employer is looking for. Some people really value a college education. Other people are just like, tell me what you can do. Most of the time that I've been in a hiring situation or I've been looking for people as the hiring person, it was more, I want to see what your copy is like. Show me a sample article. If you want to work for me as a writer, show me how you write. And it's the same for community management, I think. If you want to show me how you're going to interact with the community, how do you currently interact with the community? I don't care where you came from or what you did. If you have community relevant experience, that's the most important part. Hmm. Does that help?
No, that makes perfect sense. Yeah,
it does.
It's better to have experience and something to back up than just a piece of paper saying, here, I learned this.
Of course. Yeah, no, because if you have, say, a degree in marketing, a lot of community management jobs actually fall under marketing. Mine does not, which is one of the reasons I like working here. They may want a marketing degree, but if it's really about having a conversation with people, they're going to look to how do you have a conversation. It's not what you have, it's who you are and what you do or what you can do. And I've always found that to be far more important. So yeah, don't be discouraged if you don't have a piece of paper that says me good at talking to people. it's much more about like, no, let me show you how I talk to people. Let me show you my blog where I explain this aspect of your game. Let me show you my forum posts where I think that I had a positive influence and I steered this around in a way that, it turned out to be a better experience and a better conversation for everyone involved. That's going to matter more.
That's good to hear. I think, and obviously it depends on the job, but I'm always happy to hear that experience matters more than education. Not to, downplay education, but a lot of that
could just be. I'm a big fan of college. College worked for me, and I'm glad I went, and I learned a lot more than I ever thought that I would have about a great many things. Not just what I was studying, but also the job market, how to approach it, and what my strengths were as a human being, not just as a professional. Mm-hmm. College is a great experience if you can afford it. If you can't afford it, it doesn't make you less of a human or less employable.
Mm, yeah, that's exactly my point. I've known people who just like very middle class just went to college because their parents said go to college. Like they necessarily didn't pay attention in class or, just pretty much just having fun and their parents said go to college, so they went there. But I know a ton of smart people who didn't go to college because they were broke. So I don't think the situation you're born into shouldn't determine your future. So that's why I think experience should be more valued over education.
No, I would agree with you there, and I've seen positive examples of that happening in both of my industries, in both writing and in community management. It's who you are, not what you did.
Okay. Thanks for joining us today. It's been a very great and interesting conversation.
I'm sorry I ran long.
don't be sorry at all. No, this is talky.
But yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I love talking games, obviously. Let me do the obligatory plugs before I go. Rocksmith.ubi.com. Yeah, sure. Oh. That's where you go for Rocksmith. Rocksmith.ubi.com. Basically, if you just search anything for Rocksmith Xbox 360 or Rocksmith PS4, you'll find it. My personal Twitter is at Dan Amrick. If you want to ask me any follow-up questions, I'm available. At Rocksmith Game on Twitter. The studio that I work for is at Ubisoft Studio SF. I think that's it. Although, I have my own podcast. If you're bored and you want to listen to geek interviews, it's Dan and Cat Talk with a K for Cat. My wife and I basically do a chat show with interesting nerds every week. And so we had like a guy that designs theme park attractions for a living. And we had the world champion of pinball on. And when we did pro wrestling, we handled it as we have a friend who owns his own wrestling federation. So, so if you're looking for like another hour in your podcast rotation, check it out there.
Oh, wow. Aaron, do you want to throw out our info before we go?
Yes. Of course, if you want to stay in the know of what we're doing, Twitter is the best way possible, at Digital High Show, no underscores or dashes or anything like that. Please head on over to entertainmentfuse.com to listen to Digital High every week. We also make sure to link to our previous episodes on iTunes. Also, you want to do at EntertainFuse, both of which for our streaming side. I always try to make sure at least an hour to 5-10 minutes beforehand of whatever's going to go on with that. But I believe that to be all. Dan, thank you again for being on. It's very cool for you to be on. And I know I learned a lot, and I really appreciate you telling everything you could.
Totally my pleasure. I love peeling back the curtain as much as I can.
Alrighty, that's it for this week. Stay tuned for next week's episode of Digital High, your source for entertainment news and discussion. Digital High.